Another episode of the Fancast Movies Podcast. My name is Eric Davis, managing editor over at movies.com. Joining me, as he does always from a galaxy far, far away, is Sean O'Connell. He's the movies content director at cinemablend.com. And we're going to talk about a bunch of things today, Sean. Most notably, Interstellar, Christopher Nolan's movie, comes out this week. And we're going to get into it. I want to get into it with you. We're like, spoilers, everything.
Oh, good.
So if you're going to listen to this podcast, you haven't seen Interstellar yet, listen to like the first half because we're talking Star Wars, and then you can kind of shut us off for the Interstellar conversation. But definitely come back after you've seen it because we're going to hash this out, Sean. But let's start off with the big news: Star Wars Episode 7 released its official title. What is that title, Sean? And what do you think about it?
The title is The Force Awakens. And it kind of unceremoniously just dropped as part of a Facebook post that the principal photography had wrapped. And they said, by the way, it's called this.
What do you want them to do? You want them to be like, we're going to do a parade? We're going to be a parade down Disneyland, and we're going to shoot like fireworks into the sky. It's going to spell out the title of Star Wars. You know, knowing Disney, I expect them to kind of do that.
Fanfare. Yeah, I don't know. That was one of the last shoes to drop on this production. I found it funny that we were still referring it, you know, primarily as Episode 7 for so long, and nobody really knew what to call it. And even now with this, The Force Awakens, like, I don't really know what that means. It could suggest a lot of different things, like, you hear that something is awakening, it means that it was in some form of slumber. And I didn't know that the Force was going to be inactive for this 30-year period between Return of the Jedi and this new story. So that they'll have to answer that, of course. But, you know, these subtitles, they primarily don't mean much of anything. You know, they speak in a larger term about what the story might be about, but I want to see footage. Like, now we're at the point where I just need to see what the thing's going to look like.
I you know, with a Star Wars film, I disagree. I think the subtitle is a lot.
Okay,
it means a lot when we reference Star Wars movies, and it comes up in a lot of conversations. You know, all you have to say to somebody is, "Yeah, well, have you seen Empire?
Right.
Have you seen Jedi?" You know, and they'd immediately know what you're talking about. You're talking about that subtitle, The Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, A New Hope, Attack of the Clones, Phantom Menace, Return of the Sith. One of the things I like – oh, was it Revenge of the Sith? It was Revenge of the Sith, wasn't it?
Return? Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, Revenge of the Sith. What I like about this title and then I want to mention the fact that Episode 7 is nowhere near. I'm curious. Has Disney gotten rid of the episodes?
I don't know if they've dropped
that. Is that going to go away?
I don't know if they've dropped that. They're all called Episode Something, right? It has to be.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like when they first announced it, it was Episode 7, 8, and 9, and then there was going to be these standalone films that came in between them. But I feel like with Star Wars films and with a title treatment, it does get a little clunky when you have Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. So I could see it popping up in other kind of branding.
Right.
But maybe not that official title treatment. You know, I'm trying to think back to some of the other title treatments for Star Wars, and were the episodes in there, or were there some of them were just like Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back? Or
I think they were just kind of called like Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi. Plus, what is the shorthand for this one? You're not going to call it Force.
It's going to be called Awakens.
Yo, have you seen Awakens? What'd you think of Awakens? Phantom Menace kind of rolls off the tongue.
Phantom Menace, you call Attack of the Clones. You see, it's interesting with the I feel like with the first ones, well, at least with Empire and Jedi,
right.
you're able to say something like, have you seen Empire? Have you seen Jedi? People instantly know what you do. With A New Hope, you have to say A New Hope, I think. Or Episode 4, or the first one. And then with the prequels, you're kind of saying their whole titles. Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones. But what I like about this one is that it doesn't reveal what's at stake. It doesn't say this is what we're about. Well, I feel like a lot of the other titles have said this is what's happening.
Yeah.
And the Empire is getting their revenge. The Jedi are returning to fight the Empire. The clones, the Attack of the Clones. Here come the clones. The Phantom Menace is a little kind of sketchy, but you know, okay, there's this menace and it's phantom-like. And Revenge of the Sith, I mean, come on, it's pretty obvious what happens there. This one, The Force Awakens, and it's interesting because this is the first time they've ever used the Force in a Star Wars title. The Force is what binds the Jedi and Sith together. And I wonder if they're going to play with that. But like you said, it could also be a force that has nothing to do with the quote-unquote force that awakens from some slumber, this force that, it kind of is devastating to some of our favorite characters like Luke and Han Solo. And we'll see.
So wait, so the conversation I had with a colleague today was, when will we see a teaser trailer? Do you think that it's going to be a December type thing? My bet was Super Bowl, but my friend said he doesn't think that they need the Super Bowl. He thinks that, you know, Star Wars transcends even the largest sporting event in our society.
Yeah, you know, I think if we're going to see a teaser trailer before the end of the year, we're not going to see one on Big Hero 6, which comes out this weekend, but right. We could see one if they do it. I say we see it with Into the Woods. But what I would do if I was Disney is I just hold on to this sucker. And you know what you do, man. You drop this teaser trailer right in front of Avengers Age of Ultron. You say, what's up? What's up with Disney, man? Yeah, that's what you do if you're Disney. And I'm sure they're going to do that. If we do see a trailer for Star Wars The Force Awakens before that, we're definitely going to see one with Avengers Age of Ultron. That's for damn sure. I would hope that they would do that.
Sure, because you need to get people into the seats, you know, somehow. You're going to have to lure people into Avengers Age of Ultron.
But I just think it's cool. I think that's where Disney comes up and they say, yeah, you know, Marvel, this is ours.
Right.
And you know what else is ours? Star Wars. And here's your trailer, dudes. That's what I think they're going to do. So we'll see. But yeah, Into the Woods would be the best bet because that's the big Disney movie coming out in December. I can't see them throwing it on someone else's movie.
As big as that Age of Ultron trailer drop was, and that was like that fried the internet. I just think the first footage from Episode 7 is going to be 10 times that.
Yeah.
Because we've been inundated with Marvel stuff. Like we only had an Avengers movie a few years back, and we've had plenty of Marvel movies since then. So it wasn't like seeing something completely new again after a very long time off.
I agree. And I will say, as a movie fan, one of the things I remember most is watching that Phantom Menace trailer for the first time.
I remember
seeing the teaser poster first in like a movie theater, and I was like, oh no, oh my God, you know, it's happening. And then that first teaser trailer is one of my biggest memories in terms of watching trailers and just the excitement for it. So I'm really looking forward to experiencing that again with a new Star Wars movie, because there's nothing like watching a Star Wars trailer for the first time for a new Star Wars movie. You know, even if the prequels maybe didn't live up to expectations that you had,
right?
You cannot deny watching that Phantom Menace trailer for the first time was not like Goosebump City.
I still love that the poster for. I just saw it in a store recently of little Jake Lloyd with the Darth Vader shadow. That's one of the best promotional images I've ever seen. I think that's great.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're going to see. We're going to see what happens. The Force is awakening, man.
I like it. What the heck? There's nothing to hate about it.
There's nothing to hate about it. You know, and we live in this culture where everyone is analyzing these subtitles like what the hell they are. And I'll give them some of these subtitles. I'm like, I don't know what that's going to be about. But I
Paul
like
H going crazy with the reveal of the Age of Ultron. Is just the title came up and people lost their minds.
Yeah, I think Marvel has an easier time just because they have these classic storylines from the comics.
Yeah,
that people they already have these built-in fan bases for these specific storylines. So all they have to do is just like, you know, say the story. I mean, it's Captain America: Civil War. Everybody knows the Civil War storyline, so people just go nuts for it.
Well, there could be some, you know, expanded universe Star Wars stuff that they could have referenced and just didn't. They chose not to. So.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I think Batman vs. Superman, if that subtitle was like The Dark Knight Returns
yeah, yeah.
versus Dawn of Justice, you know, that's something maybe DC will learn. Maybe DC will learn, you know, what why don't we play into these classic storylines,
right,
that people are fans of, versus going and doing and just kind of Dawn of Justice, you know?
DC doesn't want us to see their movies. They don't really care if you show up for their movies.
We're gonna see a lot of their movies pretty soon. Yeah. But let's move on. We're 10 minutes in, and it's time, man. It's time. Oh. We're gonna talk Interstellar. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going. We're spoiling Interstellar. Right from here on, this is your warning in all caps. Warning: spoilers to follow. And I know Sean and I. I think we feel pretty differently on it. I mean, I, you know, you, I've been watching you on Twitter, and you're just like, I hate this movie, and that's hard for me because I there is no way I hate this movie.
Okay,
and so let's dive in.
Yeah, so everyone's gone. We assume that they're gone. We can talk freely about
everyone. There's one guy in Pittsburgh listening to this right now. He's like, I'm still here, guys. I saw it. I saw it last night in IMAX. Let's go.
So there's no way that you could not recognize the big problems that this movie has. It like as a movie, it's not good, dude. It's not good.
I disagree. I think it's a good movie. I think it's a fun movie. I think it's a visceral movie-going experience. I think you see it on a large screen, and it takes you for a ride. I think it's got a lot of big ideas. It's got a lot of brainy science in it, and I do agree that it kind of. It makes some leaps, you know, when McConaughey is reading Morse code through the dust falling down, and you know, that's your first time where you're like, okay, if I'm gonna be on board with this, then this is the moment where I get on board. And I think if you get on board with him and you're like, okay, I can kind of see it, then maybe we do it, you know, then maybe you go for it. But yeah, you know, there are some leaps, and I think some of that probably has to do with the fact that they had to mash together a Steven Spielberg movie and a Christopher Nolan movie.
I do wonder how this might have played out in Spielberg's hands, because I don't think that Nolan is the type of filmmaker to make the emotional connections that this movie would like to make.
Well, that's where it's at. I mean, I spoke to Jonathan Nolan, and I asked him straight up, what's the difference between this one and the Spielberg one? And he says, largely it's intact in terms of the emotional stuff, because it was always a movie about a father and a daughter. Okay. You know, a lot of Spielberg's movies, he credits Close Encounters of the Third Kind. He said when I started first working on it with Spielberg, I watched a lot of Close Encounters of the Third Kind in terms of this guy who loves his family, but he's disconnected from his family because the larger universe at hand is what's pulling him, in this kind of tug and war between what else is out there, for humanity, but then also your family and what you owe your family and sort of a lot of those things.
Okay, so I don't have a problem with the ideas at play in Interstellar. I think it has a lot of interesting ideas. I have a lot of problems with the execution or the fumbling of an effective way of getting through all of these ideas in a way that allows you to actually connect and believe in what's happening on screen. And I'm not even talking about the science or the science fiction of that all, because I'm willing to ride wormholes and, you know, race across the surface of a black hole so you can collect enough data to send back to your daughter, you know, so that in the course of 80 years she can solve the Earth's famine problem. That's fine. I'm fine with all of that.
That's fine. Yeah. I buy that stuff. I buy him tweaking on the guitar. That's the Fifth Dimension. And
now that scene is the dumbest scene I've seen in a movie in a very long time.
It's a cool scene to watch, though. I dug it.
Fine.
I was like, all right.
It looks fine, but it's just stupid. And I want to get to a theory that I have about that later on in the podcast. But the idea of they float, I guess, a lot of things that are going to pay off later early on. And because I didn't get it or didn't really connect it or care, the movie lost me really early. And I'm talking about the ghost in Murph's room, mm-hmm. and the dust that she's seeing and why she's even doing the Morse code in the bookshelves and all of this stuff that you're just supposed to file away and hope that it makes sense later. And it does. It's given an explanation, but to me, the explanation was so insufficient.
It's a lot to jump on.
But so it drives them to this secret NASA base, which thankfully for the movie, because it wouldn't exist without it, it's driving distance from wherever his farm is. And he shows up, and it's populated by all these colleagues who know him from his previous days as an astronaut, I guess. And they're like, "You're the perfect person for this mission that we're about to embark on. So you have to do this." And they're automatically adamant about like, "You have to do this." And he's like, "I've got a family." And they're like, "You got to leave him behind." But if he didn't stumble on this secret NASA base, they weren't even looking for him. It's not like there had to be a better way to get him involved in that program. That when that happened, I was just like, "Oh, that's really like why." The ghost Morse code person sent them to the secret NASA base and they needed him, and he's all of a sudden he's out the door.
Look, have you dealt with ghost Morse code people?
No, I haven't.
All right, well,
I have.
start speaking from experience, Sean. Yeah, what? No, it's a bit of a leap. Like I said, there are some leaps you have to take as an audience member, and I agree with you that I don't think they did a good enough job setting up his past, the accident. What right. He was going for, they show you a brief scene where okay, he was a fighter pilot of some kind. There was an accident. We don't know the details there, and you know that's typical Nolan, is him saying I don't want to give the audience, I ain't giving the audience everything. They're gonna have to work for it a little bit, and I'm fine working for it.
Right,
but yeah, if there was a little bit more set up there that defined him as why is this guy the perfect guy, instead right. of them telling us he's the perfect guy, show us why he's the perfect guy. Right. And then when he goes on his mission, we can kind of relate that to that a little bit more. And they do spend a good amount of time down on Earth before the mission begins. And I think they could have spent that time a little more wisely setting him up.
Totally.
Yes. But you know, but that's Nolan for you. He probably is just like, yeah, nah.
Because in the time that we spend with Murph and Cooper together on screen, there isn't enough of a connection to me for me to care, because the thrust of the rest of this movie is this father going to get home to the daughter? And the only reason that I was remotely connected to that reunion is just because it's a father-daughter. Yeah. I didn't really want those characters to get back together. It's the perfect example, like you just said it. Nolan will tell you over and over and over again, but you're not shown it. You don't feel it. And so that works when it's cold science. You know, if they're in a predicament and these brainiac astronauts are able to riff off the top of their head, well, what if we do anti-gravity because time isn't affected by gravity, and all those, you know, info dumps where I'm like, I don't know what those guys just said, but fine, let's move on to the next thing. In the moments where you have to feel the emotion of Interstellar, I never did. Never once.
I don't know. I felt it. I felt it. I definitely felt it in the scene. Probably my favorite scene in the film is when he's watching the videos.
Okay.
Of his children over the course of the 20 some odd years that he was on that water planet, when really it was only a couple of hours.
Right.
And then he comes back and he watches those videos. And it's an incredible scene. I spoke to Nolan about that scene. He says it was the most difficult scene in the film because he wrote it, but he didn't. The whole point is where do you drop it in?
Right.
And not only that, but you know, and he said that was the one scene that meant when McConaughey read the script, he put a pin in that scene and he goes, I like to see how we're going to figure that scene out.
Okay.
Because it's a difficult scene. You have to, as for an actor, it's a really difficult scene. You have to say to a guy, look, you're about to watch 23 years of your kids' lives that you just missed in a couple of hours.
Right.
And, I felt the weight of that scene. I definitely felt emotional there. I teared up there. I told Nolan, I said, it's the first time I teared up during a Christopher Nolan movie. Laughed there.
Right.
But I did feel the emotion. Towards the end, not as much. I wasn't crazy with that ending when he walks over to his daughter.
Are we going to get into the ending?
We'll get there. But yeah, but I did feel an emotional connection with that scene. But like you said, I'm a father. I have a daughter.
Okay. So I would agree with you on paper that I think those things worked. To me, they didn't really work in the execution. And one of the things with that also too is And I think the idea – I like the idea when they suggested it of if we're going to go down to one of these planets and we spend a short amount of time, it's going to mean a lot of time passes on Earth, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then that just raises so many other questions about what's going on back home on Earth. And what have these people been doing for the past 23 years? And to me, it speaks to the lack of character development in these important supporting characters. Casey Affleck, he gets so glanced over. Like, there's a lot of things that are suggested about that guy's character in terms of he lost a child. His family's sick for some reason, but they're still in this same farm. Kane's character, who looked like he was 80 when they left for the mission, 20-something years later, he's still alive. They haven't figured out anything else in 23 years. You know, they haven't cracked any sort of code. And then they sort of drop this, well, he's been hiding the secret to the answer to his equation for this long. Like, I think, like, each interesting idea that Nolan has – creates so many more questions that the movie doesn't have an interest in answering. And it kept frustrating me every time. I was like, I wanted to pause it and just be like, wait a second. Okay, you said this, but now that means this, 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 and this. And none of that stuff gets answered to me.
Well, tell us how you really feel, Sean.
And not only that. Instead, he wastes his time with this reading of the poem about raging against the dying of the light, which is the most pretentious bit of poetry that I've ever seen. And he keeps feeding it to his characters over and over again. And it's Michael Caine's dying words. The movie just felt so fake important. It really frustrated me.
Yeah. No, you know, I agree with some of what you're saying. But it didn't bother me as much as it did to you. I guess, I go into a Christopher Nolan movie, I expect to work a little bit outside of what he's giving me. And it definitely makes you work. You're definitely questioning things. And there's some stuff that just you're probably not going to be on board with. But overall, when I left there, I felt like I had been through an experience. And it was a movie going experience that I feel like isn't being delivered enough. That sort of brainy blockbuster.
Right.
And I really appreciated that about it. And I really liked about it. I really liked that about it. I like how they let him kind of go to those places. But I do agree. There's a lot that they're packing in.
And now it's three hours.
Yeah.
Do you think the movie justified its 3-hour runtime?
I mean, I think it's a movie that needs to be 3 hours.
Okay.
But like I said, I think that they could have taken certain scenes and put a little bit more effort into condensing them so that it's a little bit easier to kind of go from point A to point B to point C.
All right, let's talk about the Matt Damon cameo.
Let's talk about that Matt Damon cameo. That's a divisive cameo because he kind of comes back. And now Damon voices the robot too.
Right, he's Tars? Is he the voice of Tars?
I believe he's the voice of Tars.
He might be. Did you have the same problem in your screening of the audio mix, the bad audio mix that buzzed over lines?
I did not. A lot of people are saying that, but I do not remember there being a audio problem.
Oh, if it happened to you, you would understand it because for our screening, it happened early. Where it was like this hum that just kept coming out of the speakers, like in a rhythm. And it was, I thought the speakers in our house were broken. I leaned over to a colleague and I asked, like, is this intentional? I can't hear what they're saying in certain spots. And the Zimmer score to me was not in sync with what Nolan was doing visually. I thought that they were off a lot. And I kind of blamed the presentation, like, of our theater. I thought that something had gone wrong in the presentation, but then to read online that all these other people are running into issues with their IMAX presentation that the sound mix is bad. We weren't an isolated event, apparently.
Yeah, that was first of all, Bill Irwin. Is the voice of Tars. Josh Stewart is Case. Okay. I do not remember running into problems. I was a little bit thrown off. At first, because I saw it at 70mm with the IMAX, and I felt like early on the 70mm was a little dark, and then all of a sudden it just blows up to this IMAX, and that shift is a little jarring.
Right.
At first, but then you kind of get used to it, especially as you go off. I'm sorry. There was a little beeping that went off.
Okay, so the Damon cameo, right? Yes. He wakes up out of his cryogenic sleep, right? And he's happy to see them, which is fine, you know? Like, that's great. He was one of these astronauts. This is a far-fetched thing, but this is one of the things I was willing to ride with. NASA, or what exists of NASA, is sending these 12 astronauts to these 12 potential planets, yes, to explore. And then they're receiving all of their data, right? But all three of the potentially good planets that we could move to, the data was being broadcast wrong. Like, we were wrong from the get-go. This expedition was never going to succeed, right? Because the first one, that pilot crashed out and died from the get-go in the waves. We found out that, like, she probably died a few minutes before they arrived, but because of the time difference, it had been years since they left.
Yeah.
And then Nolan's able to create these four-story waves out of water that's only ankle high, which I don't understand either, but I get it. Science fiction, you can't really question it, right? That's fine. And then the second guy, he just lied. Is that right? Is that what I understood? He just lied because he didn't want to be alone. Like, he regretted when he got up there, and he's like, oh, crap, now I'm going to be alone for the rest of my life. I'll just lie and tell him that it's good here, even though it really isn't. Is that what happened?
He did. I think his human emotions got the best of him. He wanted to be rescued. That's why he wanted people to come to him.
Okay.
And he did. Yeah, he lied. He was that was the problem. You know, she was drawn to the one guy that she had fallen in love with.
Right.
That he would not, you know, his signal had stopped, but she loved him. And, you know, that's a big theme in this, that you sort of have to trust love, and love conquers all. And she wanted to go to him, but McConaughey wanted to go to the other guy because his signal was still, he was still putting off a signal.
Right, right.
And Damon was putting off that signal, and then he went to sleep, basically kind of saying, I'm done, hoping that somebody would come in and rescue him.
And then there was that fist fight on the ice planet. That was all very hokey to me. I didn't really enjoy that. And then what happened to McConaughey's face that he was, like, clutching his face for 15 minutes and rolling around? Like, I didn't understand what – but, like, McConaughey was, like – I mean, Damon was, like, headbutting him. And I thought his shield was going to completely crack open. And
yeah, I think that's what happened. Didn't his shield crack and he was losing oxygen?
I guess. Yeah, I couldn't really tell.
Because then Hathaway came in and started feeding him saved him.
She did. She popped open his mask and fed him the oxygen. Yeah. I don't know. By then I was half checking out of the movie at that point. It had really lost me. So let's get to the ending.
Let's get to the ending.
My theory on the ending of this movie. I think that he died, and this may sound pretty far-fetched to me, to you, but I think when he ejects himself from this craft and he floats out into space,
that's where he dies.
I think he dies there. And because Damon had that whole speech to him earlier about, you know, when you're dying, what do you see? You see your kids.
Yeah, you see your family.
And they give you that survival instinct where you're going to fight a little bit harder, right? So for everything from that point on, he ejects from the craft. Let's say he dies there. The next thing that happens is he falls into that bizarro triangle square thing where he's able to do the what I love to call Morse code bookshelf.
Where he's able to accomplish the goals of saving humanity.
Essentially.
Being able to witness humanity being saved. Being able to see his daughter again.
Right.
And being able to you know, ride off into the sunset to go find Anne Hathaway, who's just chilling on that
Who now I also think, like, to play along with my theory, I hate the he was dead the whole time theory. That's the stupidest thing to describe. But if you don't believe that he died in that, because then I think, like, he sees his daughter in this future world. And again, Nolan's heart to me is not in this reunion, because when they finally do reunite, like, he makes a little joke about how, like, oh, you told them that I love farming. And she's like, oh, Dad, good to see you. Now go.
She kicks him out of the room. She's like, go find Hathaway.
Go find Hathaway. Why? Why? There was never any kind of a suggestion that there was a romantic connection between he and Anne Hathaway. Why would he even have to go get her? Yeah. I don't understand. So yeah. I think maybe that Anne Hathaway dead too. Like, she went down to that planet and died. I don't know, because then the movie just ends. It's a terrible ending. It just ends. It just stops being. It doesn't get to a point of closure. When he finally reunites with his daughter, if it's even happening, she just boots him out. She's like,
I was a little thrown off. I was a little thrown off in that scene. I was like, why is she kicking him out of the room?
Immediately.
Yeah, like she's got all these other like family around him, and he's like, you know, it's almost like, yeah, I haven't seen you in years.
They even make a big deal about saying like, oh, the doctors say she shouldn't travel because she's pretty much dying, but she hears you're here, so she's going to come see you. And she sees him, and she's like, all right, you can go now. You can go now. So, okay, if he didn't die, if my theory is completely wrong, right, then instead we're led to believe that his encounter with the Morse code bookshelf actually happened. And all of the reasons that they give for why that thing could even exist, like his conversation with TARS, because there's some sort of fifth dimension that the quote-unquote they can control, where time and space and gravity and none of this stuff matters, or it's controllable. And all of that stuff was just info dumped in such a poor way that I was like, what are we even watching here?
It was a little crazy. You had to take some leaps there at the end.
Talking about taking leaps.
I know. You're not taking the leaps. Obviously, you're not taking leaps. Obviously.
So go ahead. Tell me why I'm wrong. Tell me why I'm wrong.
You know, Sean, in a lot of ways, you're not. You're not wrong. It's a lot. It's a lot to digest. It's a lot to kind of take in. You know, I think the film gives you a lot to talk about.
Right.
I liked that fifth dimension stuff. I thought it was really cool.
Okay.
I went with the story. I was like, all right, if this is a story they're giving us, you know, because at that point I didn't know where else you're going to go.
Right.
And if they're forcing them to slap a happy ending on this, then I guess that's where you have to go. But I kind of dug the fact that it was him sort of, sending messages the whole time.
Okay.
To himself, to his daughter. I dug that part of it from another dimension. I thought that was cool. But yeah, execution. A lot of the execution was a little where it's hard to buy. I give you that.
I would love Nolan to direct someone else's screenplay. I mean, I'm not saying that he isn't a talented director, but I think he and his brother get a little bit lost in what they're trying to build.
I think they're very ambitious.
I won't say that they're not.
And I think it's a film that's very ambitious, and it tries to do a lot of things, almost to the point where it's like, oh my God, they're letting us do these things. Let's just keep doing more of these things.
Right.
You know, because it's a unique blockbuster. It's unlike any blockbuster that is really made today. And I think that's good. It's great that we have at least one filmmaker who's allowed to make them, and I hope he keeps making them. I really love Inception. I probably liked Inception a little bit more than this, but in terms of just experiencing a movie, I really enjoyed The Ride. I just enjoyed The Ride. I enjoyed watching it. I thought it was really cool. I thought it was inventive in a lot of areas. I thought it introduced things that we haven't seen in a sci-fi movie.
Right.
And I really appreciated that about the movie. And yeah, you know, you can go down a lot of these black holes when it comes to the story and when it comes to some decisions that characters made. It's hard to disagree with you because you are right in a lot of these situations. I agree. Why did she kick him out of the hospital room at the end? You know, there's a lot of whys going on. But you cannot deny that this film does not fuel conversation.
No, it certainly – I mean, we ran a poll on Cinema Blend where we had an open forum for people to talk about the film with spoilers. And we ran like, what would you rank it? And 28% of the people gave it 5 stars and 34% gave it 0 stars. And all the in-between numbers got like one single digit percentage, like 5%, 4%. You either adored it or you hated it. Like there really was no in-between. It was kind of fascinating.
Why do you think that is?
Because I think he has a dedicated fan base that really do love almost anything that he does.
That want to love it no matter what. They want to they want to champion him.
And initially, you're going to have the people who just rebel against him. Now, I think as more people go see it this weekend, those numbers will balance out. There'll be people who give it a chance, not because it's Nolan, but because it's just the new blockbuster and it's something they want to check out and see. And they'll like some of it and they won't, you know, they'll think some of it doesn't work and they'll fall right in the middle kind of thing. But initially, that push was really torn between his followers and the people who just for whatever reason want him to fail. I don't want him to fail. I actually want him to keep trying movies, of course, you know. But yeah, this one really surprised me of how much it turned me off and turned me off early. And even like I think The Dark Knight Rises has a lot of problems, you know, even as a Batman film to conclude that trilogy. But I still found a lot to like in it. Inception.
Oh, yeah. I found a lot to like in The Dark Knight Rises. That Dark Knight Rises is a movie that I wasn't as crazy about when I walked out of the theater, but I still find myself watching on cable all the time.
Yeah, if it's on, I'll stay with it for sure.
There's something about his films that pull you in, and I'm really curious. You know, I've only watched Interstellar one time, and I feel like it's a movie that deserves to be watched a couple of times.
Right.
I'm not writing this movie off after one time, like it seems like you are. You're saying I'm done. I know what I saw. I'm writing it off.
Yeah, well, here's what I have said to people in the past couple of days. Like, even with a bloated 3-hour movie, I'm often able to point out, like, I think there's a really good 90-minute movie in there. I don't feel that way about this movie. I really don't think that the central concept worked. Because I don't think the idea of – I like the idea of an astronaut having to complete a mission to reunite with his family, but that's not what this movie is. This movie is about so much more than that. It's about this plan A and plan B and repopulating new planets and what happens when we go through a wormhole and what if we encounter a black hole. And there's so much going on here.
There are a lot of ideas.
Not that I need a simple story, but I kind of needed one story – dominantly, you know, that touched on all the other things, and I didn't feel like there was even that one dominant story in it. I didn't feel like it was there. So I don't know.
All right. Well, that's Sean. I enjoyed the ride. I had a good time. When I was done, I had a lot of questions, sure. But even now, and even after talking to you, yeah, I still have questions. I still have things that I wasn't crazy about. But I really enjoyed the experience of watching it, mm-hmm. Especially of watching it on IMAX. I really thought it was just visceral entertainment, and it gives you a lot to talk about. It gives you a lot to think about, and I think there's a lot of conversations that are going to come out of this movie. And yeah, there's going to be conversations that come out of it that are like, why did he do this? Why did he do that? But I think there are some other interesting conversations about space travel, about black holes, about galaxies. And I remember on the train ride home, I was just Googling around because I knew I was going to speak to the writer. So I was just Googling all kinds of different things because I was really trying to figure it out. And I wound up reading love letters that Albert Einstein wrote to his wife.
Right.
Because that's kind of the first place I went to when I was thinking about this movie was just Einstein and a lot of the things that he had to say about the things that he had to say. But I wound up reading these awful love letters that he wrote to his wife when he was just really cold to her. And it's like they're love letters, but he's cold about it, and there's not a lot of emotion there. And right. And it sort of reminded me a bit about the film, where there's a lot of emotion and there's a lot of talk about love, mm-hmm. But maybe you don't feel as much as you should.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. It is really interesting to – I'm hearing a lot of feedback from people who don't agree with me, and I which is fine. I mean everyone's entitled to their own opinions. But it is interesting to see how this one's dividing people up.
I'm
waiting for more people to see it. I'm interested for it to hit a larger base of people so more reactions can come flowing in. I love that give and take.
And so am I. And so you let us know what you thought about it in the comments section on Twitter. At Eric Davis, at Sean_O'Connell, and let us know what you think about Interstellar, because we could keep talking probably, Sean.
Yes.
We could keep going into the fifth dimension.
Of course.
You had to like some of that black hole stuff, though. That was cool, visually.
Yeah, a lot of the science stuff, isolated from what's going on in the movie, is fascinating. When they went through the wormhole, it was really exciting. I mean, there's some really good ideas in this film. I've sadly felt that the overall film that contained them didn't live up to what I wanted it to do. But yeah.
Well, there you go.
Do what you want them to do.
Sean feels how he feels. I feel how I feel. I liked it. I thought it was a good experience watching it. I think you should see it. You think people should see it, or you think people should stay away from seeing it?
I actually think people should avoid it.
Oh, come on.
can't recommend it. I really can't recommend it. No, Eric, I honestly, like, a half an hour into it, I was starting to check out. And by an hour into it, I was like, I'm ready for it to be over. And by the end of it, and especially the way that it ended, I was angry. I came out of that movie angry, and I can't recommend you to go into any kind of movie that makes you that angry.
I recommend going to see it. I think Christopher Nolan is one of our foremost forward-thinking filmmakers out there right now. I think when he makes a movie, I think it's worth seeing, no matter how complicated it is. And I had a very wonderful time kind of watching this film. And I cannot say don't go see it. So I definitely say go see it. But then let us know what you think. Sean, thank you very much.
Of course, anytime, man.
For joining me as Interstellar Awakens on this podcast. And thank you. Enjoy your weekend at the movies. Go see Interstellar. Go see Big Hero 6, which we didn't talk about, but it's a very good movie.
And I loved it.
I think you should go see that as well. Sean loved that one.
I like that one a lot. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Now, that to me was a lot of fun. That was a good ride.
I think two good rides. Sean thinks one good ride. You make your own decision. Let us know what you choose. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and we'll be back.